Welcome to Red Inker. I'm Jared Kimber. This Red Inker is about batting, and so we get on someone who is pretty good at it, AB de Vries. We talk about playing fast bowling, how he got good against spin, quick hands, other sports, fixing his technique, the great batters he played with, who he modelled his game on, and why Graham Smith cornered him in an elevator. Let me start with this. There's a famous story about you at Lord's, struggling in a test match and coming in, and then there's a big conversation about your future as a batter and how seriously you need to take the game. I know Jarvis Callis has talked about this before, and Mickey Arthur, I think it's in his book as well. Do you remember that, the conversation that you had with Graham Smith, and could you sort of take us through that a little bit?
Absolutely. I remember it clearly, like yesterday, actually. It was a important moment in my career where I was just sort of becoming a senior player in the team, and the expectation from the leadership group was for me to take more responsibility and just to play with a bit more ownership and take more responsibility while being out there and not sort of stay in my own bubble, but start thinking about team dynamics in a way as well. So while you're staying in your bubble, also read the situation, understand where we're at in the game, whether it's first or second innings. Obviously, things change all the time. That particular test match, I was in good form. I was seeing the ball incredibly well. It almost felt too easy that day when I came out to bat. I think I got to 40 and got out. I think it was Monty who was the left. I remember it was a left-arm spinner. I think it was Monty caught mid-on by James Anderson. And it was very soft. I was very frustrated because I did all the hard work. I obviously wanted to get 100 at Lord's. So the drive was there. I feel that day almost came too easy, and that was maybe my downfall where, you know, I pushed a little bit too hard and sort of forgot about the game situation. So frustration was there, but I definitely needed a bit of a kick from someone looking back at it now. At the time, it was quite impactful when we got back to the hotel, got in the lift, and that's when Graham sort of unleashed a little bit. He saw that as an opportunity where I can't run away, I think. But anyway, yeah, so a couple of harsh words really to make me understand the importance of me getting out in that situation. And it was obviously very important. I didn't take it very well at the time. I didn't feel like I deserved the criticism. Obviously, in the moment, it's difficult to see and to understand where everything is coming from. And I felt I was being attacked. And a week or two later, a month later, looking back, I realized that was a very important moment and I needed some harsh words to just wake up a bit and realize I'm one of the senior players now and it's time to start playing situations better. So yes, I do remember it and it was really important.
Were you cruising in your career on natural talent at that point? Is that the point where you understood the kind of, I know you talked about the team dynamics and Matt situation, but is that the point in your life where you kind of realized that if you're going to be the best player in the world, there's other things that need to come up as well?
Yeah, I've obviously always had a natural ability to hit a ball. I played ball sports growing up and things came naturally to me. But I would say a lot of people throw that term around too often with me. He's just naturally gifted. Game is easy for him. That's never been the case. I actually felt that out of a lot of batters that I've compared myself with, I was the one that struggled the most with my technique. With my back lift, it was behind my back. I can clearly remember going through a lot of phases where I struggled technically. So it doesn't matter how gifted you are or how well you can hit a ball. If your technique's not good enough at that level, they find you out and they expose you, you know? There was a lot of hard work that went in behind closed doors. And also from a mental point of view, that's a very crucial part of the game. So, I think the natural ability was there, but the hard work needed to be done. And for me to understand as well that you need to lay the foundation in games, absorb the pressure at times, and also vice versa when the gates open up to really run through it and to apply pressure to the opposition. So understanding that part of the game, the roller coaster ride you need to go through, also technically working very hard on that and the mental aspect of the game. it all was probably around the time where I started feeling comfortable. I think 2008 was the year where I felt comfortable with my technique. So that's 4 years of international cricket before I started feeling comfortable. That's a lot of hard work that I needed to put in order to get my defensive game in place.
You talked about your back lift. Is there anything else technically that you felt that you had to change at that point?
My feet, the weight distribution, whether I was more my front foot, back foot. I tried everything, literally. I tried back and across. I tried to stand still. Then my head would move across too much, would fall over. The back lift issue was most probably from other sports, almost like a golf swing where you pull it behind your body in a way. Tennis as well, you know, it's that rotation. So I was so used to doing that, where cricket is a lot more, you know, it's a bit more open. You don't really rotate your upper body like in with the other sports. So I really struggled with that. And I needed to force myself to get that the backlift out, keep my hands close to my body, but backlift out a bit in order to get into the channel. So once I clicked with that, it helped a lot. But yes, those are the things I fell over with my head a lot. Purely, most probably because my backlift went behind my back a bit too much. I tried to counter with that and then the head would start going. And then just feet, how to stand with my shoulder, knees, head and toes lining up, letting the ball come to me. That was most probably the most important thing, is allowing the ball to come into your zone before you commit to a certain shot. Also was alongside the technical side of that also came a mental thing, because some bowlers were really fast through the air, but you had to tell yourself to still wait for it, even though it's quick. So not an easy thing to be successful with.
That's really interesting, because that sort of leads into my next one. The best innings I saw you play was at Centurion against Mitchell Johnson. That wicket where no one else in your team could make any runs. And it was a bit of a weird wicket. Some balls were flying through, some were staying a little bit low. You're facing Mitchell Johnson in that sort of situation. How are you working through that innings?
I, looking back at that, I remember I was just quiet in my head. There was not much going on. I felt good with my technique from a mental aspect as well. Mitch would always challenge me a bit vocally and physically, which I always loved. From a very young age, I really enjoyed those kind of challenges. It would almost like really let that bulb go on in the head, you know, where I realized, okay, I need to wake up here. This is the game is on. Where I always felt like the boring bowlers were a lot more threatening to me. But yeah, so that day, so the senses were up. The awareness was as high as it could be. And I felt I was in really good form. And once again, the challenge of the wicket, I saw as like the battle is on, you know. I needed to be awake. And I mean, everything played into my hands in that regard. And then I still needed to go and do it and be brave and so forth. But yes, so Mitch can click it up to 150 k's an hour. He probably did in that test match more often than not. That was definitely during that time where I started to master that part of it, of the faster the bowler, the more you almost got allowed to come. Once I clicked that, the game gets a lot easier once you do that. Once you're very still, you allow the ball to be released before you react. The minute you start playing it out of the bowler's hands, you really get yourself into trouble and you get rushed because you make the wrong movements. And I mean, you have split seconds to get into a good position and to decide to pick the right shot for the particular ball. So when you're a little bit off with your front foot or your back foot or your head, you lose a couple of yards and you're right. That's why guys get rushed. I didn't master it throughout my entire career. And that was, to me, was good form and bad form. When I did that to seamers, you honestly felt like they were bowling underarmers. So I was probably in the best kind of form there, where Mitch didn't rush me on that day, even though the wicket did a lot. It was at home. It's my home ground. Family members were there. There was just so much to play for and so much reason to be brave out there and just to, you know, and face up to one of the fiercest fast bowlers of all time.
Is that one of the best innings you've played?
When I look back at the highlights, Mitch sort of gave up, which was quite nice. Back at the back ends of my innings, he started bowling cutters, slower balls.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately how I got out. So very disappointed with that, because I was very early on the one I got out where I tried to hit him over the covers and I got caught there early on the ball. So even though I mastered playing it nice and late, I still got out that way. So that really bugs me. it's similar to golfers. You play a round of golf and you always feel you could have played a couple of shots better. So obviously there was a great innings. I've played better innings before. I think my final test 100 in Port Elizabeth was as flawless as it can be. I didn't put one foot wrong in that entire inning. So that to me was a bit better. But the Centurion wicket was more challenging. And obviously Mitch Johnson was in the form of his life.
Yeah, you had Brian Harris as well. So it wasn't particularly fun from the other end, was it? Just on 90 miles an hour bowling, you know, you talked about a little bit about, you know, letting the bowlers come to you and everything else. How much is it an advantage of playing on a wicket like Centurion, which obviously comes through a lot more, growing up in South Africa where there are so many fast bowlers? How much of you playing 90 mile an hour bowlers is natural, and how much did you have to learn?
No, you definitely have to be pretty fast when a bowler's going at 90 miles an hour on a fast deck. I mean, everyone's got that little bit of fear of what if he gets through my defenses and he hits me on my chest or my neck or my head. So slow wickets are definitely easier. I mean, fast bowlers like in Port Elizabeth, it's a bit of a slower deck, and most Indian wickets as well, where you can allow the ball to bounce. So there's no doubt that the fear factor is completely gone then, and all you need to do is focus on the basics and do your technique well. Look at the skill of the bowler. On a fast wicket, you're always thinking, like, if he beats me on the short ball, and then obviously he traps you with not coming forward to full things. So there's that mental battle of always telling yourself, go forward no matter what, go forward. Even though I played the short ball well, and batters will lie to you if they tell you they didn't think about the short stuff. It's in the back of the mind of every batter. So that's the tough thing of a fast wicket. And yes, growing up on these kind of wickets certainly helped a bit. But I mean, it didn't change for me it doesn't matter which batter you are. You always, when a bowler's fast on a fast deck, you're thinking about it. So I don't know what else to say with that question, to be honest. But I think it helped growing up with it. But I still had to train it. I would go for sessions with Alan Donald with a stick. We'd probably throw around 160. Honestly, I would miss most of it, but that fear factor of, I just had to train it. And I always did it before playing against Australia and guys with fast bowling attacks. I would do a lot of short stuff where it's almost unrealistic, but when you go out in the middle, it helps a lot.
There's something that Nasser Hussain talked about with you, which was fast hands. He said that you had a lot of different things that you trained when it came to your fast hands. How did you sort of train that element of your play?
Yeah, well, I had a lot of exercises or drills where I force myself to play the ball late. But the problem with playing it late, that's one thing and it's great, but you have to have fast hands there to create power. So the later you play it, I mean, if you're lazy there, the ball's going to go absolutely nowhere. So to delay everything, but then to train getting through the ball at the very last second, I think Butler does that as well pretty well in T20 cricket. He holds his position nice and long, and then it's almost very wristy at the end. Just make sure your hands get through it. And that's, I mean, then it's you almost create double power because you're playing it late. There's this great base, but if you can just get through it, it really flies off the bat. So I trained that. I forced myself to play balls late in the nets and with all my drills, and then realizing very quickly, the one was the Jar Callis drill that he taught me, to stand still and you're not allowed to move your feet. So that tells you, if I'm not moving my feet, you have to play the ball late. Otherwise, you're not going to hit it. But then after the first few hits, I realized this ball is going to go nowhere. And that training of opening up my hits and really getting the hands through the ball, I did that for many years. So ultimately, that's probably what Nasser saw. And obviously playing other sports like tennis and a few other hockey, maybe, I don't know what other sport would have helped with that. But having that explosiveness through the ball, especially tennis, I think, obviously helped growing up with that.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, just from a technical aspect, obviously you were, you know, the best player in all three formats at different stages in your career, maybe even the same stage. how much do you have to change your technical side of things going from T20 to Test cricket, or do you not think about it from that perspective?
Yeah, it never hassled me at all. I get that question a lot, and with my YouTube channel, I also ask that question a lot to other players because it is an intriguing topic. To me, it was 100% a mental battle to just adapt to certain situations. And that's when I played at my best. I would almost, it was almost good to me not to know which format I'm playing. and more so looking at the situation, whether it's a white ball or red ball, just having the defense in place, looking up around me, understanding what the captain's trying to do, look at the scoreboard, take the information in and then back into my zone, into that bubble, you know. I didn't struggle at all to jump between formats. I love the challenge of it. And to me, as I said, it was just a mental thing, just to sort of refresh, understand what situation you're in and what's required of you as a player.
How did you end up playing spin so well? You came from in a South African team that actually had a few really good players of spin, obviously, you know, Callis and Amla as well. But how did you develop that side of your game? Because, you know, traditionally South Africans haven't quite been on the same sort of level as you three were.
Yeah, that was 100% just practice. That was definitely not a thing that came naturally to me. And that was just picking up tips and looking at other players, looking at Callis, looking at some of the subcontinent players at the time, Sehwag. We played them in Chennai where he scored 300 in a day. I mean, it was brutal, but just looking at stuff like that and understanding how they work through an innings with regards to spin and how they dominate it and how they absorb a bit as well and then apply the pressure again. So just picking up a lot of things along the way. Seeing Yunus Khan play the sweep shot, picking up tips from that. And then just sort of making sure it goes into the mind. I practice that. I go and try it in the nets. I've seen guys play the ball late with a 45-degree angle bat, getting their hands in front of the pads. Those things I never knew about. So I taught myself by looking at other players and making sure those things become part of my technique. So it wasn't natural. I think I was actually very weak against spin the first 4 or 5 years of my career. There was always that element of doubt when I played against spinners, like, I don't know what's going to come, which way it's turning, would get my pad in the way. I remember getting out to Jeetan Patel, the New Zealander, at Newlands. I mean, on a deck that's not even turning much.
Yeah.
But just overcommitting with my front foot. So stuff like that, getting a bat pad, sitting on the side and then letting it sink in. Why did it happen that way? I have no idea why. And then understanding the hands need to get in front of the pad. Don't get a big stride in against spinners. So I taught myself. That's basically what it is. Learning as you go along. And I think that's possibly one of my biggest strengths, having that adaptability to different situations and learning along the way as well, looking at other players, picking up little tips. Towards the back end of my career even, I played a domestic four-day game in Benoni, of all places. I came back from injury and Heinrich Klaassen was batting ahead of me. So I would watch him and I'll never forget picking up a lot of stuff on that day and sort of reinforcing it into my technique again and just remembering things that I might have forgotten about. So I think that's a crucial part of a batter's development is to learn as you go on and being open to picking up new stuff, trying stuff, and ultimately training it in the nets.
There's a story I heard from a friend of yours that a young player would go out in the middle and bat with you, especially when you're at RCB, and you would say, "Watch this bowler. He's really clever. You know, he knows what he's doing." And then you would go down and you'd face the next ball of this bowler and smash him for six. And I can see you laughing already, but you were very respectful and very analytical. And you could tell through this interview and, you know, listening to your YouTube channel and everything else, you think about those things. But there, you do have another level that a lot of players don't access. How much of that is you continually learning, coming through everything, the other sports that you played, and you know how much is this natural? AB de Villiers sees the ball earlier than other players.
the desire and the ability to have a big impact and the know-how that's most probably the one thing that I was born with in a way, from a young age, two older brothers. I'm not exact. I can't put my finger on why. Because that's maybe the one area when I look back that sort of separated me from most players is the explosiveness out of nowhere. And then, I mean, I surprise myself more often than not looking back at some of my knocks. I by chance stumbled across the West Indies South Africa World Cup game in Sydney. And I can't remember the numbers now, but there was a stage where I think it was 10 overs left or 12 or 15. And when I looked at the score, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, we got over 400 that day. And I've no idea how we got there from there, but it's so I think that's maybe one thing that was just a natural, just a characteristic that I was sort of born with, this enthusiasm, always seeing the glass half full. We can always win no matter what, any situation is possible. I'm still like that to this day. And that's maybe got to do with my upbringing, the values my parents taught me. But I've always been like that. I mean, a game is never over until it's over, that kind of mentality. And I mean, I clearly remember there was under 19, Faf and I and a few youngsters came into the Northern set up with Dave Nosworthy. And we played a three-day warm-up game against some random team. And I can't remember exactly what happened. Oh, it was going to be a draw. So we needed another 170 in like, I think 11 overs or something silly, 12. So the captain shook hands and we walked off and I was so upset. I went to Nosworthy and I said, can we at least have a crack, man? What, you can't just shake hands. We want to, I see a possibility. Anyway, we got pretty close at the end. He pulled us back on, said, listen, this little arrogant youngster thinks they've got a chance. And Paul Harris was bowling and I started opening up spaces in the field that they started panicking a bit. You know, started pushing out the field and Faf and I were batting together and we were really, so, but just that mentality of, I would always respect bowlers, and that's maybe what this guy is talking about. But the minute I had a sniff, I would go absolutely flat out. Or the minute I saw a bit of weakness, I mean, I've just always had that desire in me to go and have a huge impact and to turn a game on its head.
That game you were just talking about, that was a first class game, was it?
No, it was a practice match. It was like a warm up kind of practice match. I can't remember exactly who, and maybe it was a intra squad, like two. 11s from Titans playing against each other. I can't exactly remember, but I just remember them calling it off, saying they can't bowl us out and we can't get the total. And I said, no, I think we can get that. And they almost laughed at me. And I just said, well, I want to try. I've always, in my knots, in my innings, I would want to lay the foundation to ultimately have fun, you know? And that's why I always talk about you got to earn the right. You got to set the foundation in place before you almost get a license. Because we were brought up with so many rules, structures. This is how batting should be like. You're not allowed to go play aggressive there. So there's always barriers. And I just remember as a youngster, always like so much looking forward to that moment where they give you a bit of freedom and they tell you, okay, the game allows you to go for it now. And I would always like get butterflies of excitement. So once again, it's something that's come from a very young age.
Just a couple of final thoughts on a few different players. Why do you think Callis was so great?
This is brought to you by Cricket 8, the new home of cricket intelligence.
Just control, composure, calmness. Whether he was that calm from the inside, I don't know. But he's got this ability, something that I discovered towards the back end of my career. And I've spoken to Shane Watson about it in depth now because he wrote a book about it, about the mental side of the game. Callis was, excuse my language, but he knew how to bullshit himself to such an extent that he would actually go and execute. And I realized some of my best knocks in my life was very similar. I almost had to put up a front, almost act in a way, but really put everything on the line. And that's when I really did the magical stuff. When I was so scared that I would tell myself, like, you got to go into your shell here, just survive. And then my mind going, no. Turn around, look him in the eye, and face up to this, you know, almost even like a Virat Kohli does that as well. He looks for a fight because he knows that's when the magic comes.
Yeah.
Because then you put everything on the line. When once you're prepared to lose everything and get a send off from the Australian team, then you're in the battle and you do supernatural things when you do that. So Jacques Callis, I think, had that. He honestly believed that a bowler couldn't get him out. And I remember, whenever he got out, there would always be something. It was never him. It was the wicket or the umpire made a mistake. Something happened, but it was never, ever him. So he honestly just bullshitted himself and said, I've never made a mistake in my life. I'm the best. And that's the way you play.
Graham Smith?
Yeah, just drive and desire. Very strong personality with, he was a great leader. He's still the best leader I've played under. Very inspirational character. And so similar thing at his chest out.
Yeah.
He would face the entire world by himself. And that's when he was at his best. Once again, putting everything on the line, feeling like you've got something to lose. And then you play at your best cricket. He captained like that. He was sometimes controversial. He wouldn't stand back to anyone, support his teammates. So just very brave. He had some flaws with his technique, but he countered that with an incredible mind and character.
Hashim Amla?
Yeah, Hash was an incredibly gifted guy. He maybe lacked a little bit of that impactful side of it, that X factor of being able to explode completely. But other than that, he was perfect in my eyes. Just an incredible mind as well, very calm, very composed. Had his technical struggles throughout his career, and then turned that into one of his strengths, his technique, being able to be really compact and solid and play it late. But just one of the most gifted guys. I mean, when he hit a cover drive sometimes, and he more often than not hit it on the up, some of the balls more often weren't even as full or drivable. And the other guy I can think of is Quinton de Kock. But outside the two of them, there are very, very few players who can drive on the up like the two of them consistently. I mean, it's easy to drive on the up 3 out of 10 times, but Ash used to do it 10 out of 10. Ball snipping around, swinging, and he would just get on top of it and hit it through the covers with ease.
Is that because he was waiting for it to be under his eyes?
He played it very late. And even if he did nick it, he would sort of drop short sometimes. The slips, I think Joe Root accomplished that as well. But yeah, that's when you really snap as a batter. But yeah, I think his biggest strength was his mind and just repeating that routine every single time he'd go out to bat.
Virat Kohli?
Just the all-rounder, all-round great player. He can play any situation. But his fighting spirit, I think, is the biggest thing for him. What I spoke about earlier, when he feels like there's something to play for, that's when he's at his best. And when he's got a challenge and someone's in his way of him getting to his goal. So yeah, I would always, when I batted with him, sort of try and get him a bit fired up. And when I played against him, tell the guys, you shut up. You don't say one word to Virat. Don't even look at him. I just think his fighting spirit and his desire to want to be the best. Obviously, all-round class player, technically, mentally, but that just that fight. You see it in guys like a Nadal, Djokovic in tennis. That's that fighting spirit. So that's what I feel Virat's got.
And last one is Chris Gayle.
Chris Gayle, the intimidation factor. he intimidated bowling attacks big time. I mean, obviously, you can say that you intimidated. You intimidate opposition, but you still got to go and execute and actually give them something to feel intimidated about. But he did. He did both. He was a big guy, stood there the crease, and when he decided to go, it was almost it was really tough for the bowlers to come to bowl to. Obviously, an incredible eye. He's got this big, big wingspan, almost a bat swing. Could reach any ball. And I would just say intimidated guys by his skill and class and his consistency in hitting the big shots.
And just last one, if you could pick to be any batter in the world, who are you trying to be? Who did you want to be?
That's tough to say. I mean, I obviously grew up watching a lot of my role models play, Hansie Cronje and Jonty Rhodes, Gary Kirsten. I think a combination of all those guys. Adrian Caper hitting those sixes back in the day inspired me, but then Gary Kirsten's long test innings would also be something I would reflect on while playing, thinking like, but they did it, so, you know, stand up and do it as well, you know, you got a responsibility.
So it's less one person, and it's funny because it was the way you talked about spin before as well, is you were constantly looking for individual things from different players, weren't you?
I picked up from everyone throughout my career, so I would say I was inspired as a youngster, because of the Proteas or the South African team at that time, Lance Klusener sort of opened my eyes on what's possible out there and that a game is never done, you know. So that kind of stuff really inspired me. And then while I was playing, I would literally look at anyone at net sessions. I would pick stuff up, look at guys' feet, pick up what they're doing wrong, but also maybe take one thing that I can use for myself, and then I'll try it out in the nets. But 100%, there's no one better. There's too many to mention. I mean, Kumar Sangakkara over the years. There's just so many guys. Sehwag with spin. Tough to say, but you're spot on. I try to pick up from everyone.
Beautiful. Well, thank you very much for coming on, mate.
It's my pleasure. Any time. I hope you do well with that book, and all the very best.
All right. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thanks, Jared. Have a good day.
Enjoy your golf.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.